Tuesday, February 8th, the city was wrapped in a soft cocoon of white. I slept late and had a mid-morning meeting with Liz and Doug Cater and Simone in the Queen's sitting room to discuss a possible education trip through Appalachia, Pennsylvania and West Virginia, Kentucky, North Carolina, and Tennessee. For the purpose to give exposure to some of the wonderful things Lyndon has achieved in education. Teachers Corps in operation in some back holler of West Virginia. An adult education project. New buildings at a new community college in Tennessee. Winding up at a reception at the Hermitage given by Governor Buford Ellington for education-oriented people of all facets. Maybe John Gardner might accompany me. It sounded very interesting, and I'd like to go, and there are a lot of hazards. I lunched on a hamburger in the room with Linda. In the middle of the afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. Arthur Urshan came to tour and tea. They were a couple who had lost their only son in Vietnam, and we'd had several exchanges of letters with them. Lyndon had, very simple and touching, when they wrote that they would be in town for a convention and asked if they could come to see us. I said yes. I'd been a little taken aback when a wire had come from some public relations person connected with the convention, wanting to be on hand to take pictures. We had promptly answered that this was a quite personal visit, no pictures. But when I met them, I felt that they were as simple, as earnest, as likable as their letters had seemed, and no part of this PR man's eagerness to make publicity out of their visit. Such a visit must necessarily be strained, to begin at least. But soon I found myself feeling quite at home with them. She was the more talkative of the two, a plump, comfortable woman, quick to tell me about her family. She had two daughters beside the son, and she'd been out to spend 4 days with him during his rest and recreation time in Hawaii. She said he was never bitter and knew what he was there for. They all knew, the soldiers, he said, but they did feel a little concerned about the folks back home who were doing all the complaining. He said, I write to the generals, Westmoreland and Dupuy, because I think they must be lonesome. I bet nobody writes to the generals. I'd agree with her on the lonesome part. I felt that they were still partially anesthetized. The blow had not completely come home yet. All at the same time, it was painful and exhausting, with a thread of sweetness in it, because of their pride in their son. They were two of the real innocents, I think. You almost forget that there are lots of people in the world like them. A little later, Roxanne came, and we had a cup of tea in the West Hall. This was one of those days when I drank my way through the day. She's getting a master's in journalism at Columbia. Seemed very excited about it. Not in love with anybody. This is rather sad at 23 or 24. More anxious to go back to live in Europe than to do anything in the United States. How strange. She said she'd been with her CBS people to cover the White House this morning, part of her assignment as a journalism student, and that nobody that she worked with or around knew that she had any relation to the White House. At 6 o'clock, that was the main event of the day. I'd invited the White House fellows, this year's 18, and the five who'd stayed on from last year, to bring their wives and come for a drink. It was a low-key, informal talking party with a few of our staff members, the Doug Caters, the Bob Kentners, and their young children who are just back from the Peace Corps, and Richard Graham, the director of the National Teachers Corps, and Bill Baxter, my Episcopal minister, who had left to take the place Bill Moyers once had with the Peace Corps. They're some of the brightest young people in the whole country, in their late 20s or early 30s, already established and marked for success, who are spending a year of their lives working for the government in an area of great exposure, the sharpest demands and challenges the government has, because the fellow works directly in the office of the director of the budget, are with John Gardner in the HEW, are with Bill Wirtz in labor, and our three or four of them are right here in the White House. One, assigned to Dr. Hornig, Sanford Greenberg, had been named by the Junior Chamber of Commerce as one of the 10 most outstanding young men in the United States, along, incidentally, with Joe Califano. One, I've come to know well and be very fond of, a member of last year's crop, Tom Johnson from Georgia, who's number two or three as White House press officer. There's only one woman in the crowd, Jane Cahill, who's with HUD, and only one Texan, Walter Heumann of Dallas. He's in post office. And one, so I gather, Negro, Major Ronald Lee, one of the most attractive of all, a regular Army man, part of last year's crop, who's with Larry O'Brien at the post office, After the brief receiving line, I sat down in the red room and soon found myself in the midst of a very interesting group of about 8 crowded around. Unfortunately, though, they wanted to hear about me and I wanted to hear about them. But there was a good exchange. I think the thing I heard repeated most was that they were impressed with the quality of the men at the top of the government and how many hours they put in working on it. And among the women it was that they never saw their husbands for dinner. There seemed to be great camaraderie among them all. To my delight, suddenly someone was at my elbow saying, "The president has come in the blue room. He'd like to say a few words." And my crowd immediately melted into the blue room. Lyndon stood rather in the middle of a large circle, with his hands clasped loosely behind him, his head lowered slightly, talking very quietly. It was one of those wonderful times when I would have given anything to have it on tape. His language was so simple, fresh, terse. You could have heard a pin drop. The burden of it in general was, it's not hard for a president to do what's right. It's hard for him to know what's right. And a brief resume of some of our achievements, which they, this group, can take pride. I had planned this meeting without him, partly because I want to get to know these young people myself, partly because I want to do anything I can to increase the feeling of closeness among all the people who work around us. Closeness, determination, high spirits. These are bad times. The press is buffeting us on every hand. I want to search for talent in any way that I can, and I want to fight back in any way that I can. To have Lyndon come in made the evening, because it is him I want them to feel close to. One of the fellows leaned over to me and said, "If only everybody could hear him like we hear him. Can't we get him on TV like this?" I'm afraid not. It was a long party. I did not leave until 8:30. Then I had 3 quick games of bowling, felt somewhat less caged for it. And back on the second floor, waited until 11 o'clock when Lyndon came with Joe Califano and George Christian, and we finally sat down to dinner, and then a rub and to bed. The Manchester book has at last run its full course, but we're wading through a dank swamp of bad stories and bad feeling, nothing good on the horizon, except Lucy, who is thoroughly happy, got back home safe. And Pat is registered in 2 courses. Sometimes there's a little loneliness in her voice. I think.